Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 103 of Season 10 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off his stint on this Christmas day is Robert Smith of
Merry Christmas, everybody! Merry Christmas! Hi, guys.
All right, so minute 103 begins with the cast list continuing in the credits and ends with a disclaimer from the Transit Authority. So yesterday we ended things with the gotcha minute of this, or the gotcha shot of this movie, with the nice music from David Shire, emphasizing the fact that Mr. Green's sneeze has caught him. So I guess we're going to now start calling him Sneezy.
I'm not saying it would be a better movie if they were dwarf-themed, but I'm just saying.
I don't know. I think it would have been much more of a comedy. Definitely, they wouldn't be able to get away with that today. In 1974, they would have been able to get away with it.
That's fair.
You know, anyone trying something like that today, I mean, come on. Look at the Snow White debacle this year. So, you know.
Right.
And that was Disney itself. But whatever. We won't go there. So, this minute begins with a minute of credits, with a list of characters and cast members that we've pointed out. But most of these people are people that probably... most people watching this movie haven't figured out, weren't able to catch who they were. You have Mr. Madsen, who was the original conductor, who was helping, this young conductor, Bud Carmody, who is the next character listed here. Bud is the guy who was shot by Mr. Blue. Then we have Marino, who is one of the guys working with Kaz, looking at the board of everything moving. Then we have the TA secretary, we have the dispatcher, we have the plumber, which is the guy that Kaz brought in to fish out the ring. Then we have the mayor's nurse, the TA chairman, the controller. We have Patrolman Miskowski, Patrolman O'Keefe, Patrolman Wentworth, and Patrolman Ricci, who we're not really sure who each of these guys were. You know, the assumption is two of them are the guys in the squad car that flips over, and two of them are the guys walking down, bringing the money to the hijackers. But, you know, we're not able to really figure out who's who among them, because there's no identifying features on any of them, even with their names. Nobody calls any of them by those names. Then we have Muscat, who is the guy who, when we open the door, was missing a leg. Then after that, we have the executive on the train, which, again, maybe it's the guy who Mr. Gray threatened. Do you think that's possible?
Could be. Yeah, I'm not too sure.
The guy who said, if you move one step forward, I'm going to shoot off your peepee. You know, that guy.
Right.
Because he was actually saved, because he wasn't in the he wasn't in the first car. Then we get a list of the four Japanese executives: Mr. Tamashita, Mr. Matsumoto, Mr. Yashimura, and Mr. Nakabashi. And what's really funny is you think that they would have just used the real names of the actors in this type of situation. And one of them is the character name of Nakabashi, his real name is Nakamoru. So it's close.
So close.
Yes, very close. Then you have
missed it by that much.
Exactly. By that much. Then thank you, Get Smart. then you have the angry woman and the angry man. I'm not really sure who they were.
well, they're the angry ones, don't you remember?
Yes, of course. Of course. Then you have the tower man, the TA receptionist, who's Michelle Matthau, who we talked about was Walter Matthau's niece, even though Matthau was spelled differently. Then you have the woman on the platform and the man on the platform. The man on the platform is actually an actor that I'm familiar with from other movies, Bill Cobbs. The one movie that jumps out at me that I'm thinking of that he was in was Demolition Man. But I know he's been in other movies. Then you have the subway guard played by Jim Pelham, who, as we mentioned at the beginning of the movie, that there is a Pelham in this movie. Then we get the police sergeant, the police lieutenant, and the train expediter. And then we get a list of all the stunt drivers, which it's surprising they needed so many stunt drivers. They have 9 stunt drivers. You know, just to flip over one car, you need 9 stunt drivers. I don't know. A little strange to me.
Maybe some of them were the stunt, you know, the subway drivers, you know.
Maybe. And then the strangest credit comes right after that, which, and Tony Roberts says Warren LaSalle. It's like, you know, you'd think that he would have been with the other people, the other cast members, not the stuntmen, or not after the stuntmen. So, yeah, it's strange.
His agent wasn't as good on the contracts. I mean, it happens from time to time.
Apparently. And then the credits continue. We get the casting credit, followed by a little acknowledgement that says the producers wish to acknowledge the outstanding cooperation of the city of New York, whose assistance made the filming of this motion picture possible, which is very nice. You know, that even in the 70s, they're giving a credit like this about thanking New York. And again, the credit stays on the screen for quite a long time. It stays there for about 10 seconds, meaning they're
really want to thank them.
We really want to thank them. And it wasn't at a time when people were trying to stretch runtime. You know, there's no reason to have to stretch that to 10 seconds. And then we get 2 seconds of a disclaimer from the Transit Authority, which I'm going to hold off and talk about tomorrow, because it's a little bit strange. You know, I think it's going to be on screen a lot more tomorrow, so we'll wait to talk about that. But you know, it's something that you don't normally find in movies, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't know if you paid any attention to what they said there or anything, but it goes in contrast with the fact that we're very happy to thank the New York City for everything they've done for us. So I don't know, a little bit strange the way that they do that. And that's the way this minute goes. Is there anything you wanted to say about this movie, this minute? Anything.
Just to keep our tradition alive, I feel that we've bonded over these minutes. We have a Columbo bond, so we need to keep Columbo alive for at least one more minute. One thing I wanted to bring up, I forgot to bring up on yesterday's episode, with the gotcha moment with Walter Matthau's face and all that. So I had mentioned that it was the perfect Columbo minute. I wanted to ask you, now that I know that you're a fellow Columbo fan, do you feel, with Walter Matthau being around in this time frame, that given the way he played this character, do you feel that he would have been a good Columbo? Question one. I'll let you expound on that, and I have a follow-up.
Okay. Would he have been a good Columbo? You see, that's the thing. Peter Falk is the perfect Columbo, so it's hard to try to think of somebody else who would be able to replace him. As much as I love Walter Matthau, and I really love him, and especially the way that he does it in this movie, I don't think he would have been as good of a Columbo as Peter Falk. That would be.
And that's fair. And never question on whether he'd be a replacement, because even with, like, when they talked about the remake and throwing like Tony Shalhoub, and that, you always hear the rumblings of that, like, or Mark Ruffalo or something like that. Like, they look like Peter Falk, but Peter Falk is Columbo. I think that's one of those things where that you can't really remake it. So I'll respect that and agree on that. My follow-up was, do you feel that he would have been a good guest murderer on a Columbo episode?
Well, having seen all of the Columbo movies slash episodes over the that they made over the years, I believe that Matthau, it would have been below him to be a to be on it.
Oh, okay.
Because from my recollection, the majority of the people who were guests on Columbo were not A-list actors. You know, they were maybe B plus list actors, but at the most, but they weren't A-list. And Matthau at this point was A-list. So I think
That's weird.
it would have been very strange to have him on an episode. I mean, again, this isn't like Law and Order, where Law and Order had everyone and anyone and everyone showing up on every one of their episodes. It doesn't matter. It didn't matter if you were A-list or B-list. The problem was is back then, when you know when whenever I was watching an episode of Law and Order, I would say, okay, so that I guess you know if John Ritter's on it, John Ritter must be the murderer. You know, that type of thing. So it was very rare that it wasn't. With Columbo, you have a very different aspect of it where in the first scene you know who the murderer is.
Right. It's not a whodunit, it's a how catch 'em, right?
That's right. That's right. So I don't think that Walter Matthau would have been chosen. I mean, obviously he wasn't. I don't think he would have been a good Columbo character murderer type of thing.
Okay.
What
Fair enough.
do you think? What do you think about that though? Do you think he would have been?
Well, absolutely. So first, with the saying that there weren't really A-list actors, Mr. Shatner would like to have a word with you, sir.
One second. Well, do you think that, I mean, Shatner was on like three or four episodes, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But was Shatner considered A-list at the time? I don't know.
No, completely a joke. It was
You
just the
know,
first one that popped up. I was like, of the people that would argue that, William Shatner would be the first in line to argue that. No, completely agree that yes, I think that. I think you bring up a valid point that Walter Matthau being a big movie star, especially during that time frame where like movie stars didn't really go on TV shows, and that's still kind of a thing that's getting a little bit better nowadays, where now you have, Kevin Costner doing his thing, Billy Bob Thornton kind of doing their thing. But like up until recently, like you were either a movie star or a TV star, and there wasn't really a whole lot of crossover. So I think that's perfectly fair. What made me think it, admittedly, I don't know that. First of all, I completely agree with the whole Peter Falk thing. Yes, I don't know that he could replace him. I think he might have been a different Columbo. As for the murder star, I don't know Matthau in this time frame when Columbo was going on would have been a good one. I was more visualizing the older, because again, my Walter Matthau is the older crotchety Walter Matthau. Just him being bothered and perturbed and going, Columbo, in the Walter Matthau voice. That's more what I made me kind of giggle and think that through. But yeah, I think in the not as great 90s TV movie Columbos, yeah, I think he could have rocked it. I don't know that he would have been, to your point, he would have been on a 70s episode of it, however. So I agree with that.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Anything else you want to say about this movie or this particular minute?
No, please stop making remakes of it. Other than that, we're good.
Okay. I agree with that sentiment 1,000%. Not even 100%. 1,000%. All right. So today's segment will be 70s movie trivia potpourri, where I will
All
give
right.
you five movie trivia questions from movies from the 70s. So let's spin the wheel and randomly see what question you're going to get. So around and around and around the wheel goes.
Do I win a lifetime supply of Lee press on nails if I get this?
If you want, you can. If that's what's good for you.
I'm not going to turn down a lifetime supply of Lee Press on Nails.
In the 1979 movie, The Muppet Movie, what song does Kermit the Frog sing while playing a banjo in a swamp at the beginning of the movie?
It's Not Easy Being Green.
Is the rainbow connected?
In my defense, green is a color on the rainbow. I'm claiming a draw on this one.
And Mr. Green, that works too. Yeah.
There you go. See, it's all a circle.
That's interesting. Okay. All right. Let's spin the wheel for your second question. Round and round and round you do. Okay. Who played the title role in the 1971 movie Fiddler on the Roof? And I know
where
I know you're a James Bond fan, so he's also a James Bond character, or in a James Bond movie.
He is. He is in On Your Majesty's Secret Service.
No, he is actually in For Your Eyes Only.
For Your Eyes Only. Okay, he's the dad to the daughter, right?
No, he's not.
No. Why am I?
First of all, you're talking about the uncle. But it's not. He's not the uncle.
The uncle, yes.
Because the uncle,
I'm sorry,
the uncle is actually played by a villain from The Empire Strikes Back, and also
Game of Thrones.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Right.
No, not Game of Thrones.
Is that Game of Thrones?
I
was on Game
no,
of Thrones
too. Not him. Not him. I know who you're thinking of, and it's not him.
Is this the part where I mentioned that I never saw A Day of the 70s? I was born in 82. Oh.
But you've seen movies.
I have seen movies from time to time. They have been known to be on my TV set. Fiddler on the Roof, unfortunately, is not one of them. I've never seen Fiddler on the Roof. Full disclosure.
Okay, I believe you're missing out, but that's my personal opinion.
Sure.
And the answer to that is Chaim Topol. He's just known as Topol.
Topol. Okay, so that is the name that I was going for. The only reason I would know that, and I couldn't come up with it, fun fact, is because of the James Bonding episode of apparently for Your Eyes Only. I was thinking it was the On Your Majesty's Secret Service, where they had Tom Lennon on there and they were talking about Topol. That's the only way I know Topol. I don't know Topol from Fiddler on the Roof. I know Topol from Tom Lennon saying it on an episode of James Bonding, and I lead a pathetic life. I'm sorry. I'll move on.
That's perfectly okay. Perfectly okay. All right, let's spin the wheel to see if you can try and redeem yourself. You're still not at the 50%. You're not at the 50% point, so it is possible that you're going to be able to make it through. All right. So your question is okay. In the 1970 movie Patton, okay.
Oh God.
What famous actor eagerly sought the role of the lead character, but was turned down by producer Frank McCarthy.
Okay, say it again. In Patton, who what?
Who eagerly sought the role, the lead role of Patton. There's a famous actor who stated many, many times that he wanted to play the role of Patton and was turned down.
Okay, so not George C. Scott. Okay, that's where I was lost.
No,
okay.
And he had won an Oscar the year before, if that helps.
I assume it's not Topol.
Yeah, and you would be correct.
Okay. We're keeping those positive vibes going. And this would have been the year before Patton, so 1973?
No, Patton came out in 70.
70, okay, so 69. I got nothing.
Okay. The
answer, I feel bad. I'm failing.
The answer is John Wayne.
John Wayne.
Yes.
Want to play Patton?
Yes.
Wow. You know when you said earlier that there's, you know, coincidences where people have the questions pop up on things they should know, and I should probably know a John Wayne question? Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, it was nice talking with you guys. Have a Merry Christmas.
You're not done yet. You still got two more. Yes, still got two more. All right, so let's spin the wheel and see what we got for you. Around and around and around the wheel goes. In the 1976 movie Carrie, with what animal's blood do Carrie's tormentors douse her with at the prom?
Pig's blood.
Very good.
That one I know.
There you go.
That one I know.
All right. And now let's spin the board for your final question. Round it
I am one for.
You're one for four so far. That's fine. No problem.
Hey, people got in the Hall of Fame with a .250 batting average. Come on.
That is very true. All right. In the 1976 film Taxi Driver, what is the famous line that Travis Bickle says to himself in the mirror?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
The line is... I was just making sure. I thought we lost our connection.
No. Yes, you are right. I was teasing you.
I appreciate the softballs on the last two. I know it's completely random. I appreciate really the random softballs at the end.
It really was. It really was. Okay. All right. Since you won't be with us tomorrow for Friday's episode, so I want to give you the opportunity and chance to give us your top five movies about New York. So why don't you give us your Fun City Friday top five. Start with your number five and work your way up.
All right. Coming at number five, I wasn't sure if I'm not a New York aficionado, if the boroughs counted as New York City.
They count.
They do. Okay. In that case, definitely Jason Takes Manhattan. It is right when the rails were starting to fall. I mean, the rails had kind of started to fall off, but the rails were really starting to fall off on Jason, to where it became so bad it's good in those types of movies. But that was one of the first ones that I got to see as a kid. I had teenage sisters during the 80s, so I had to kind of sneak under the couch to watch some of those things. But that was the first one that I got to see. It was my introduction to New York. I'll claim that. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but we'll say it is. So Jason Takes Manhattan for number five.
Okay.
For number four, we have Donnie Brasco, with Johnny Depp and Al Pacino, obviously. I can watch that movie on loop. It just has such an amazing cast. It's an amazing story, even if you're not into the whole mob stories and all that stuff. You know, definitely read Joe Pistone's book on the real life events of that. Or if you're not big into reading, check out Donnie Brasco. It's an amazing movie with Johnny Depp in it. Number three, we have Gangs of New York, Scorsese flick. Just again, one of his capturing a time period pieces, whether it's, you know, the 70s of Goodfellas or this one, you know, going back into the early days of the forming of New York. Daniel Day-Lewis just does an amazing job in that movie. I actually just watched that again last night. It was on Pluto. Anytime that it's on, I'll definitely catch it and watch it through and through. It was kind of the awakening point for me of Leonardo DiCaprio becoming a serious actor, not just the kid in Romeo and Juliet anymore. So number two, I have The Godfather. You know, that's... You can't really go wrong saying that The Godfather is a good movie, period, let alone one of the better ones that's based in New York. You know, kind of hard, but I guess one of the things that you're getting as a theme for all my ones is just the ensemble casts of all these movies. But I won't bore you to death by talking good things about The Godfather. You know, I think that's enough been said over the past 40 some odd years. Number one.
50. Well, it's actually more than 50 years, but yeah.
Yeah. Don't make me feel that old, okay? It's like 40-some. And then number one, my favorite movie based on New York. Again, as this is Christmas, it's on there. It's one of my seven movies that I have to watch every year. It's the one that I watch probably the most. The one that I'll watch kind of in a loop at the end around Christmas. Scrooged with Bill Murray. We joked about Christmas Carol, and by joke I mean that I failed miserably on the trivia question, so we'll say it was a joke. This is probably my favorite version next to Muppet Christmas Carol of the Christmas Carol story. Love Bill Murray in it, love the characters. I will pop out random quotes of Scrooged throughout the year. It doesn't have to be Christmas time. Definitely number one, and it just happens to be in New York.
Well, so as far as you're concerned, I mean, we've talked a lot about remakes and terrible, and how terrible they usually are. Where do you place Scrooge from that perspective?
See, I think the Christmas Carol is different. It's a retelling of the same story, but it's not remaking any of the previous movies. I
Okay.
think that's different to me.
Okay,
You know,
that's
it's
fair.
it. You know, he's not giving direct lines from A Christmas Carol. He's not actually Scrooge. It's a rehashing, but to me, somehow it's different. I don't really know how to explain it other than that.
Okay, no need, no need. I think it's, first of all, I love Scrooge. I think it's a great movie. In my opinion, it in some ways it's more relatable than A Christmas Carol itself.
Yes. Yes.
Nowadays, let's put it that way. But yeah, I've always loved it, and I remember I saw it in the theater when it came out, and I just love the end where everyone's singing, even on the dead people, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you, as somebody that was actually in a theater to see it, did your theater participate in the ending?
No, of course not.
You didn't have the, oh, come on, the real women.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Well.
I was 14 at the time, but I do not recall people participating in that. This wasn't a Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Just saying, been a lot cooler if you did.
Might have been, but that's just the way it is. All right, and for one final time, we will now play the game of Name That Remake.
Okay.
Which
Scrooged.
we both know you've done better with than me.
Batting average is slightly better. Yes, I'm not doing that as yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay. Right. Your luck is not with you this time.
Oh,
Because
God.
I will be very surprised if you're able to get this one.
Okay.
Sorry to preface it that way, but
No, I appreciate the prep.
I don't want to give you false hope because you never know. Okay, so the original movie came out in 1942,
Okay.
and the remake came out in 1995. Okay, so there's more of a chance you've seen the remake, but I'm still somewhat doubtful about that also.
Sure.
But we will have to wait and see if that's possible. I should probably just mostly even just tell you about the remake as opposed to the original. I truth is, in this one I've actually never even seen the original because I believe the original is a foreign language film.
Okay.
I will That's a little strange. Yeah, okay, so it is a foreign film. The original film is an Italian film
Okay.
from 1942, and it's
Yeah,
about
that's purely for Western, so.
it's about a man traveling for work on a train. He meets a lonely girl and finds out that she's pregnant, and that the baby's father has left her, and she doesn't know how to tell her parents that she's not married. So he pretends to be her husband, in order to fool her parents, and then, you know, his plan is that he will leave her, and then they'll be angry at him and not at her. Do you have any idea where this movie is going?
The only movie with a pregnant person that I can think of is Juno, so it's not Juno. Let's see.
And Juno's parents were not upset about the fact that she's pregnant.
I don't know the story of Juno. I just know from the cover art. It's a really twisted version of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Very twisted.
Got nothing. Yeah, I got nothing on that one.
Okay, so the remake from 1995 stars Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves. Oh, okay.
And you have a role played by Anthony Quinn and Giancarlo Giannini is also in it. Personally, I happen to love this movie. I think it's a great movie. It's a great story. I haven't seen the original, and now I probably should go see it. Should go watch it. Here, I'll even read to you the IMDb synopsis from the one from 1995. Paul Sutton, okay. A young married soldier, befriends a pregnant lady who is petrified her father will disown her and agrees to pose as her boyfriend. As time passes, they start growing fond of each other. Okay, so and it's the same. It came out the same year as Speed, so it's not and it's not Speed.
Yeah, that's where I'm trying to place it. I was like, okay, it's like it's not Parenthood. It's
no, that was
that's around you know, that's around Speed. Wow. Yeah, I no clue. No, not even a guess.
Okay, so the original movie is called Four Steps in the Clouds. The alternative title is The Bigamist, and the remake is named A Walk in the Cloud. Again, I love that movie. I think it's great. It's a great little romance. You also have Deborah Messing in it, and she actually plays a character you're not supposed to like.
Yeah, I've heard the name of that movie before. That's about my familiarity with it. Sorry, okay. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. So Robert, would you like for one final time this season to tell people where they can find Robert Smith?
I will. So if you'd like me to talk about movies I do know about, I do that on occasion on my podcast. It's a Support Your Local podcast where we go over classic Westerns one chapter at a time. Or if you want something a little bit more fast-paced, I do have Just a Damn Minute. That's D-A-M-M-E, where we go over Jean-Claude Van Damme movies 1 minute at a time. But both of those are available wherever you get your podcasts. Merry Christmas, everybody.
All right. Well, in your defense, you do know about the Taken Power 1-2-3. What you don't know, what you didn't know about was you know the random movies that I'm coming along with here, not you got to give credit where credit is due.
That's fair, and take credit away where credit gets taken away. So we'll settle.
Nah, I don't do that. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter. Find me on Instagram. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So Robert, thank you very much for joining me for these 4 minutes. Even though we've had a little disagreements as to what Garber knows or doesn't know.
That's fair. We will part as friends. I bury the hatchet in regards to that. It's a wonderful life argument. It's still fresh, but I'll let this one slide. No, thank you for having me. I appreciate you having me. Great movie, great podcast. Guys, keep listening. I'm sure he's going to have some great stuff coming out next.
All right. Thank you very much for that. I will be back tomorrow for the penultimate episode of this season. But until then,
Gesundheit.